Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How is your day been? A little stressful?
No, it's been great. Started early. I love early mornings.
What, 7, 6?
Oh, I was out the door by 6.
Man.
Yeah, I love early mornings. I love to get a big jump on my day.
Where'd you head out to?
Headed out to an enrollment for AFLAC. It's a busy season for us. A lot of people doing their renewals of their open enrollment.
Oh.
So busy time for me. Hey, I'm excited. Guess what's happening Friday?
What?
The opening of Twilight.
Oh, that's a vampire movie.
Yes, I read the book. My daughter read it. I can't wait. I got my T-shirt on order. I hope
really?
It comes today. Yeah, Edward Fan Club, the Bite Me shirt.
Is this like the Harry Potter of
vampires?
For
girls.
It's all girls?
Yeah, and it honestly is one of the best love stories I've ever read.
Really? Is it a series or is it one book?
It's a series, and Twilight is the movie. That's the first book. But I won't ruin it for the listeners. Go see Twilight, opening Friday.
So you're going to be there like at midnight, one of those kind of crazy
fans? No. Going with a bunch of other moms and their girls, going to dinner and then to the movie.
Nice.
Can't wait. We have great guests today, Lee. Three very interesting guests, three very different topics. But first up, Stone Payton. Stone, I'm so excited that you're here today. One of our favorite guests, an author, speaker, now a radio host, and also a guest extraordinaire. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Stone.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And you can add to your list, I'm also the father of a 16-year-old who is all over this book series by Stephanie Meyer. And she cannot wait until Friday night to see Twilight.
I can't wait either. I mean, it's kind of silly, but I don't know any of the actors. I haven't watched any of the trailers, but the girls are crazy about it. And most importantly, it's getting them to read, and really her writing style is incredible. But speaking of being crazy about vampires and love stories, I loved the article you sent me where you talked a little bit about your wife watching the Weather Channel. Tell us why you're here today and what you're here to talk about.
Well, thank you for the compliment.
I love your analogies, by the way. Your book, your analogies, they're awesome.
Well, yeah, I'm really here just to chat a little bit about this whole business of innovation execution. It has just proven to be such fun and rewarding work. And I'm really enjoying taking this work to the market and thought it might be fun to chat about it.
So when you talk about innovation execution, I thought it was really important that you framed up the terminology and you talked a little bit about weather and climate and about your wife and the Weather Channel. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah. You know, in my world, terms like weather and climate are often used to describe corporate dynamics. And particularly when you listen in on or participate in conversations with senior-level executives talking about innovation or change. Now, unfortunately, from time to time, some of the terms that are slung around the boardroom don't necessarily bring with them some commonly held definitions. And as a result, sometimes you'll see more confusion than clarity in those situations. And innovation is one of those terms. In fact, I see it confused a great deal with another term that we're all very familiar with, creativity. And innovation certainly starts with creativity, but innovation is something beyond that. Innovation is, I guess, a good way to characterize it. It's creativity with a job to do, and that job is creating value for the organization.
Can you actually create a system of innovation?
You certainly can, and in the organizational context, Lee, what you can do as a leader is create a climate for innovation, and that's the point I was trying to get at in that article that Amy mentions.
So you talk a little bit about the definitions. How does it relate to the various corporate cultures? How do you dig in when you're working with a company in, you know, defining their corporate culture and these terms?
Well, you know, that's another term that will very quickly have a senior executive's eyes go into a tailspin when you bring up a word like culture. And, you know, for a good definition of culture, a commonly held definition that everybody can agree on, you know, I would encourage you go to your favorite leadership book or talk to some bearded guy in a sweater vest and earth shoes and let him explain it to you. But the point I want to make about culture, regardless of what definition you land on, please recognize, contrary to popular opinion, the culture, your corporate culture, is probably one of the most efficient machines on the planet. So much so that any actions that don't produce immediate, visible, and positive results are very quickly displaced with behaviors that do. And you have to realize as a leader that your people and their people, they're operating from a playbook that you'll probably never see. And this mental journal, if you will, is it's populated by their experience with you and every leader before you. And there's an exact accounting in this ledger of every gap between rhetoric and reality they've ever witnessed. And the actions they take are not going to be based on your strategic intent. Culture, as efficient and powerful as it is, it cannot. It does not run on strategic intent. The fuel for culture, and therefore any shifts in culture you want to make, are a direct product of the rules that you set up for survival and prosperity.
So exactly how do you equip or change, if necessary, a culture to produce this top-line growth that you're talking about?
Well, you do what Holly in that article wishes she could do, and that's control the climate. And I know there's a great deal of information and opinion around this whole business of culture change, and shifting a culture really can be a very complex effort. But you can turn a culture toward creating value for the organization. You can turn those behaviors on a dime if you will manage the climate. And that is, but you can't teach, train, you know, wall poster your way to a different climate. You genuinely have to make some shifts in the rules for survival and prosperity for your folks. You have to create space and get your senior executive team and the people that have some logistic, economic, and political proximity to the people you want to change their behaviors. You've got to get them to express, model, and reward the shifts in behavior and mindset that you're asking of that culture. Those climate shifts, those shifts in the rules and for survival and prosperity, that you can affect those very quickly and really get an organization and the people within that organization truly innovating and creating value. You can do that very quickly. You can turn that on a dime.
Can you share maybe something you've seen happen where they were maybe in a kind of going in a negative way and you were able to come in and kind of shift?
Well, yeah, I think so. And, you know, where you see one of the nice things about working in this arena, particularly in this economic climate, you know, organizations and the people that lead them, just by necessity, they're having to look internally, Lee. They're having to look internally for answers, and they're having to get much better and produce far better results in much less time. And so there's a great deal of focus on increasing the ratio of results to time invested. So what I'm seeing is in the past when there was, maybe it's unfair to call it lackadaisical, but less than committed, concerted effort to creating value through innovation, now there's a great deal more attention toward it. And I don't know that you could see a better example of it than we find in the healthcare arena and with healthcare organizations and the pharma industry. Right now, as we speak, the gentleman that I report to is across the pond working with line managers for Bristol-Myers, and the sole focus of that work this week is to help those line managers get much better at sponsoring, expressing, modeling, and rewarding the different shifts in behavior that they're asking of their culture, and they're launching that effort by making sure that they're very clear and provide a very clear, visible innovation mandate that ties what they want from these people with respect to innovation directly back to the overarching corporate strategy. And as a result, even just by announcing that they're going to engage in this effort, even before they're actually doing the work, they're already seeing a very different kind of climate, and as a result, an increase in volume of ideas and an organization that is much better equipped to take those ideas and venture them for commercialization to create wealth for the organization.
That was a great example. I mean, it now puts it into a little bit better frame of mind for me in that it goes beyond simply fostering the creativity in that it's a matter of implementing it. When would someone reach out to you?
There are a couple of trigger points or indicators where we would encourage you to reach out to us. One is if you're starting to this, and I don't care what role you play in the organization, you can be an innovator and you can have an impact on the organization's capacity to innovate. But if you start hearing comments or conversations around, man, we get so many great ideas around here, but we never seem to implement them, that's a great time to not necessarily engage us to support you formally, but, you know, join the conversation. You know, come into the conversation with us and maybe participate in some of our ongoing research and get involved by reading some of the work that and the thought leadership that we're distributing. Would love to have you contribute and read and share and comment on the blogs that we have. So that's one particular trigger. And another is, If you're looking at trying to bring a new product to market, that's a no-brainer. Everybody knows that you need structure, process, rigor, and discipline around that, and some organizations do it pretty well. But where a lot of organizations have a real challenge in this regard is in being innovative around new processes. And new processes have so much more leverage because then you can create wealth for the organization around a never-ending stream of ideas as opposed to just in one corner of the sandbox like product.
Mm-hmm. And what's the best way for someone to reach you?
Got a toll-free number, 866-35-STONE. That's 866-357-8663. And really one of the best places, for us to just begin to collaborate get some value from each other is by joining the conversation at innovationroi.com.
Can you repeat that again?
Innovationroi.com.
Excellent. We'll have that link up too, right, Lee?
Absolutely.
Great.
Stone, I hate to cut you off because I could talk to you all morning, but thanks for being with us today and for sharing with us. We hope people will reach out to you and learn a little bit more about how you can help their business.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
So when it comes to creativity and innovation of ideas, we have a guest that's here to talk to us about how we can bring those things to the marketplace. And we're talking more about products. We're talking more about inventions. I'm very pleased to have with us today Jim DeBeta. And he comes to us after helping hundreds, maybe even thousands of people, inventors, understand how to get their ideas developed and sold to major retailers. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you.
You've got the morning voice.
Yeah.
Just woke up?
No, I have three little kids, so I am up at, well, before you were up this morning, so Aww. Let's put it that way. So,
How young is the youngest?
2 years old.
Yeah,
so
you're up early.
We've got our hands full.
You have your own built-in alarm clock.
Absolutely.
So tell us, your background is very rich, but how did you get from where you were to now inventing and helping coach inventors?
Well, I kind of grew up in the business. My dad owned a small chain of retail stores, and of course, he had to always try to find products for himself. Innovation wasn't a spoken word on Main Street, so to speak. It was always, you know, the gray-haired professor mm-hmm. kind of mentality that people thought about inventors. So I kind of just grew up around business, around products, which is really what drives our business. And, of course, the dream for a lot of people to have their products sold in retail stores and in catalogs and on Home Shopping Network and QVC. And just all growing up doing that, I always had a great interest in products, loved it. And then when I was in my early 20s, I don't even know how in the world I got involved in the binocular business. I still kind of question how I got involved in it. But hooked up with somebody on Long Island where I'm from, and we started importing unusual and very unique binoculars and quickly started selling them to people like Sharper Image, Brookstone, all these types of unique gadgety type retailers. And from there, it's just been, you know, a love of product. And then, of course, now trying to help people understand what they have to do correctly to get products to market.
You successfully sold $50 million worth of product since 1996. That's amazing. I mean, this is talking back to the binocular days too, right?
Yes.
I mean, I just can't imagine. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of product. When you go to look at an invention and somebody approaches you, how do you look at something as to whether it's a viable product to put out on the market?
Well, you know, we have processes, of course, and that's critical. We see a lot of things, a lot of good ideas, a lot of kind of interesting ideas. I guess I'll leave it at that. But we have to take people through steps. We have to actually have them send us some information. we make sure that they understand the process of getting a product to market. But we have to kind of weed things out based on, are they too complex to make based on the inventor's budget? Of course, it always takes some money to get a product to market, and we try to minimize it, but we have to base it on that. We have to base things on the person's goals. If somebody says, well, you know, I have a day job, and, you know, I'm a teacher, for example, and I don't have the time of day to do this, well, then that's an issue for us. We need to have a partner when we do this mm-hmm. kind of work. So it's very important that we first look at the product. We want to make sure that a lot of the products that we feel are successful are products that are very simple. Sometimes it's just a household item. Sometimes a lot of baby products are great products that moms come up with that help make their day a lot easier. So we try to look for simplicity. We get involved in class one and class two medical devices all the way down to, you know, pens and coffee cups and very simple ideas and even apparel. But we try to look for simplicity, the goals of the actual inventor to make sure that they're on board with the program, that they understand that it's a process, they're not going to get rich overnight. Mm-hmm. And just by that fact, we were able to kind of eliminate those inventors that we feel aren't suitable to go through this.
Can a person start with you just with like an idea?
Well, that's the beauty of what we do. We have to draw out of their head their thinking, because people come to us all day long and they say, I've got this great idea for this, or, you know, I was thinking about that. And often inventors have lots of ideas. They don't just have one thing.
Sure.
They're serial inventors, yeah. So to speak. So they come to us with everything, and we have to draw that out of them and get those ideas onto paper somehow, rough sketches, drawings. And then, of course, try to build out a framework for showing them how to get products developed and then how we can build upon what they think and then try to make the product a little more realistic.
And then so a person comes with you, let's just kind of walk through the process. Somebody they go to your website and there's a application or some sort of a form to fill out? Is that usually the first touch point?
Well, usually, people do usually find us on the internet today. That's always a great way. But when they do, they'll actually speak to somebody who will ask them a handful of questions, and then, of course, we have to sign our non-disclosures to make sure that
right.
their secret idea does not become a public idea.
Right.
And then once they do that, we will actually send them a questionnaire, and then we'll ask them some very basic questions. Again, their goals, what have they done, have they filed for patent protection, and there's lots and lots of questions that
right.
we have to qualify them. And then once they get past that venue, we're going to sit down internally and look at the products to make sure that, based on these questions we've asked them, again, are they suitable for working with us. It's important that we don't just work with everybody for the sake of business, but we want to actually help people who really want to develop products that are really good products.
Because you want everything to go to market.
Of course. Right.
So that's your objective.
Our objective is to help people that we feel we can get their products to market and do it efficiently and successfully.
Is there a product you were kind of on the fence with that you were really surprised about their success?
We actually have a handful of products now where when I first saw them, I said, I don't know. And again, this baby space is such a big space for me because I can relate to it. And, you know, moms and dads will spend just about anything on their kids. We have a baby monitor that can actually tell why a baby's crying. And when I first heard this, I said, there is no way that this monitor is going to be able to
like
say.
It's like it's translating the cries or the noises?
It's based on the sound waves of the child. If the baby cries, a certain pitch or tone of the cry will say the baby's hungry, the baby's tired.
Wow.
And I said, there's just no way. And how can we even test it? Because babies can't tell us really what's wrong.
You were right.
But
right.
they did clinical studies on the product. They provided us with a lot of proof. And then from there, we said, all right, we got to take a look at this. And now we're actually have this product in front of some of the world's largest retailers, and hopefully in 2009 we'll have this product placed. But that's a good example of something.
So you can take a product from the idea stage all the way to, like you said, like a QVC, or like every product has a different path. You have a different kind of marketing strategy for each product?
Yes, we can certainly take it from your mind all the way to market. So that is something that we specialize in. But yes, there's different channels. Some things belong on TV. Some things are better in a catalog. Sometimes
right.
things are better in mass merchant retailers, and sometimes they're better off in specialty stores. It depends, again, on the price, the value of the product, how sophisticated it is. But we do everything from the engineering to the actual marketing to the packaging of the product to the manufacturing of it as well. And we will actually sell it for those select few that we feel we really can make some headway with. We'll sell it to the major retailers for them.
How exciting. So listeners that are excited just hearing you speak, I mean, I'm excited because I've got some ideas in my mind and some thoughts and inventions that I'd love to talk to somebody about. If somebody approaches you, would you actually tell them, you know what, that's an idea I'm not interested in helping with, or would you turn away business?
We have to.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine if it's not something you feel strongly about or could execute, you simply just say, I can't help you.
We have to sleep at night. I mean, I have to wake up saying, I'm working with people, and I don't want to make somebody feel that they have a great shot at something when perhaps the idea just isn't formulated correctly. Now, that doesn't mean that, I mean, we always say there's no bad ideas. It's just, you know, people have to be open to allowing us to say, here's what we need to do to make it better. Here's how we can make it.
So well, you said you wanted a partner. It's not like, you know, that you're going to just do whatever they say, even if it's ridiculous, just to take their money.
Exactly. And that it is a partnership. There's got to be great communication. And often, I would say there's a great percentage of time when we turn people away just based on the inventor's personality.
Right. It's not a good fit for you.
We've got to be able to work well when we need them. You know, they're the inventor. They came up with the idea, and it's our job to work together and bring their vision to life. And if they have a patent or a patent pending, well, you know, you can't just change the product entirely. So we have to sometimes go back to the drawing board and make sure that we can help them.
Do you develop your own products?
I've been involved in developing products. I don't hold any patents myself, but, you know, it's funny. It's like I'm in the business, and you would think I'd have, you know, 10 patents or something. But I spend all my time helping other people reach that dream, and so I live vicariously.
You don't have any crazy ideas?
Oh, I have a lot of crazy ideas, believe me. And but, you know, every time I think of one and I do a search on the internet, a patent search, it's always taken. So I'm like, why can I be the one that it actually—
Does it have to be patented in this kind of world now?
No. People go to market all the time. I've been to market many times with products very successful without getting a patent. The whole thing is nobody knocks off failure. So when you become successful, that's when everybody's after you. But hopefully you've made a name for yourself and a brand in the marketplace.
So being first helps when you don't have a patent?
It is huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge. And you just got to know that hopefully that fun ride, while it lasts, could be over very quickly. But some people are happy with that. They just want to make some extra money or make that million or 100,000 or whatever it is they want to make.
Or just have fun.
Yeah, and it is fun. And when the biggest fun, the thing that makes your hair stand up on your arms, is when you go into a retail store and you see your product on a shelf. I mean, that's it for everybody. That's lights out. They are so happy. Mm-hmm. They're not even thinking about the money at that point. I mean, they're always thinking about the money. But, you know, that's the real thrill of working with clients. We get to help people see their dream come true, and that's huge for us.
And you have working relations with the big retailers like the Walmarts and the Targets and
every one of them,
the QVCs, and all the Home Shopping, all those?
Every single one of them. It's taken, you know, many years to develop those relationships, but they trust us that we're not going to come to them with just every idea in the world, that, you know, we're thinking about them. What are their requirements as a retailer? They have their own structure internally and their own profit margin structures, and we have to be cognizant of that, and we are. So that also sometimes will weed out products, as you guys asked before, because if it doesn't fit within the framework of places we think we can sell it, well, then we don't have anything really to go on.
Wow. I could talk to you all morning as well. As a matter of fact, I want to set up an appointment to talk to you more, because I would love to learn more about what you do, and I've got some things
and
I'd
Amy's
love for you.
Amy's got her crazy ideas.
I do. I've got my own crazy ideas.
Notebook of crazy ideas.
Well, that's good. We love crazy ideas. We love all ideas, and I think everybody at heart, to some degree, is either could be an inventor, is an inventor, or has ideas. But it's the old adage of just don't sit back and sit and kind of complain about people that when they say, you know, I thought of that and that was my idea. Well, you know, the whole thing is get up, get information, learn the process,
executing,
and get involved.
Right.
Get in the game.
Executing mediocre ideas is better than having all these great ideas in your head.
That's it. We'll draw them out. We'll make them great. Right.
Yeah. And to come to you when the idea is fresh and new rather than having already gone down that path sounds like a really good road to take, right?
It's a big money saver, too. I've seen people spend their life savings doing things the wrong way. Meanwhile, they'll go out shopping for something, you know, to buy a new cell phone, and they'll spend a week researching and just spend $80, but yet they'll spend tens of thousands of dollars sometimes and not even understand what the process is. So,
it's the learning curve. I mean, you pass forward the whole learning curve.
Absolutely.
How can people reach you?
They can reach us through various means. We have, of course, a direct line to our consumer products group, which is 770-579-0843. They can certainly visit us on the web at www.slingshotproducts.com. And if they want to learn more about me and get in touch with me and I can steer them in the right direction for what they need to do, they can visit my website, which is www.jimdebetta.com.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, appreciate it.
Next up, we have Marius Nell, who's the principal at 360 Smart Networks. And Marius has a diverse background as well, but on the technology side, I'm very anxious to find out what the word telephony means.
Well, good morning, first of
all. Good morning.
It's actually telephony.
See, I'm even saying it wrong.
I'm like, telephony? I thought it was one of Jim's products.
when I say I take the layman's approach to these interviews, I really do. I'm looking at it thinking, I'm looking at the word going, telephony. I'm going to use that in Scrabble next time.
Well, that actually illustrates a very good point about the whole business.
sorry.
we tend to make this business much more complicated than it needs to be by coming up with names like telephony and, you know, all kinds of three-letter acronyms. But in short, telephony is the concept whereby you have voice and data actually converging onto the same hardware, same software, and you have the kind of situation like, to give you an idea, the iPhone visual email could be construed as telephony.
Okay.
Or if you get a phone call and the caller ID pops up onto your computer screen, that's pretty much telephony in
okay.
a nutshell.
So it's the voice and data integration.
Exactly.
What type
exactly.
of security measures are involved in that?
Well, it depends on how much security you really need.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody works for the CIA or the FBI. So as a whole, most people overestimate their need for security. You know, we are a society that'll hand off your credit card to a complete stranger in a restaurant. But for some reason, we don't want anybody to get into our voicemail to listen to what Aunt Agnes left us. So
mm-hmm.
It's very possible to get these things encrypted, backed up to the extent that it's insane, but it's also very expensive. So once again, telephony on its own is something that's very customizable. The FBI uses it, and so do you. I don't think there's a lot of security on my iPhone account.
But the data and the security management for a small business owner is something that you would handle regularly.
Very much so.
Okay. So when would someone contact you?
Pretty much, unfortunately, when we get to speak to people, there is something wrong.
There was a problem?
Yes. They've lost data. Computers got stolen. Somebody walked away with a bunch of information.
Isn't that more of a problem, like a disgruntled employee, rather than like some hacker that's
exactly.
coming into your
exactly.
business?
In the last 15 years, I've seen data loss happen for everything except hackers. You know, mostly it's somebody that walks out the door with a CD with the company books. And unfortunately, no amount of money can protect you against something like that. So mm-hmm. unfortunately, we get involved once hard drives have failed. You know, the server doesn't work anymore, and now they have to spend a lot of money really quickly to make it to make it work. Preferably, we would like to get involved before that happens.
In terms of like a technology audit?
Well, pretty much yes. The way in which we do it is we get most of our business through word of mouth,
mm-hmm.
and mostly it's people that understand the value of IT inside their businesses. And I'm talking about small businesses here. And what happens is, you know, we would go into the company, take a look at what they have, tell them where the problems are, fix it, and then once it's fixed, we take care of it on an ongoing basis.
So how do you feel that overseas manufacturing in that type of industry, how has that affected your business? I mean, are you using overseas technology or overseas employees to help?
Not at all.
Okay.
The type of business that we're in is very much a hands-on business. We must always have the option to physically go out to your office and go fix your machine. It's kind of hard to put somebody on a plane to run over and fix your PC for you. So we are all local, usually no more than half an hour away. Obviously, we start off and try and do it remotely. If that doesn't work, somebody will be at your office in about an hour.
And then, so your clients are here in Atlanta?
Pretty much southeast. We do have clients pretty much countrywide. We actually have clients in Florida that I've never met.
So. Uh-huh. But by and large, you need to have somebody have the ability to come out and
yes.
touch the stuff.
You always have to have that option. And that, unfortunately, is where most of the remote service companies fall over. You know, at a certain point, you have to say, listen, don't worry about it. We'll be there in 30 minutes.
But when you're working remotely with someone, is that one of those situations where they just jump onto the computer of the client?
Yes.
Remotely, and then they can kind of poke around and see if there's something they can fix there?
Yes, very much so. The funny thing is some of the older clients, and even some of the younger clients, come to think of it, get very, you know, apprehensive when they start seeing their mouse move around.
Without them touching.
And it usually takes longer trying to explain to them that, you know, once we're off, we're off. You know, you can't get onto somebody's machine without their express permission. And it actually takes to fix the problem.
Telepathy.
Yes.
Not tilapia. That's a fish.
You're going to keep saying it.
I am until I get it. So with more and more people telecommuting and having virtual offices, has that increased your business?
Very much so. We found that one of the primary reasons for people telecommuting, especially in Atlanta, is, you know, to get more time. Mm-hmm. You can spend an hour and a half in traffic in Atlanta on a good day. So, you know, in tough economic times, if you want to get more productive, just stay at home. Start working at 8, stop working at 5, and you have a really short commute.
Do companies embrace that? I mean, because like if somebody, like say I was working out of my house, can I use just my normal home network and my wireless network and all that? And then how does my company's computer, how are they, you know, they're obviously using my wireless network, so they have to have their own security built in?
They do, and that's pretty much what we do. We build the infrastructure on the back end so that companies can host remote workers.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it on a corporate basis is not the same as doing it going to your corporate PC and seeing what's going on there. There's lots of more technologies involved there. To answer your question, the smart companies do actually embrace this. And the reason is very simple. Some of them use it as a carrot. You know, if you do a really good job, we'll let you work from home twice a week. But some of them understand that you can have very happy employees that you never see. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, what's better? Stay at home, do your job, get paid.
Right. Do you work with companies if they want to, like, kind of explore the mobile technology? Like, if they have, you know, a product or a service that they can offer through cell phones, do you help with that?
We do. Once again, that requires certain infrastructure on the back end. Mm-hmm. And pretty much any mobile phone can hook into, you know, whatever you're doing. Quite a few of our companies have remote salespeople. And these people travel countrywide. And we have to build the technology for those things to work.
Mm-hmm.
Maurice, you have so much knowledge to share with our listeners that we really can't capture it all in this interview. But what is the best way for people to reach you?
Well, they can go to the website, which is going to be www.360smartnet.com. Or they can call us directly on 770-518-7087. And, you know, speak to me.
Is there an industry you specialize in?
We pretty much specialize in professional services.
So if there's a professional...
Lawyers, CPAs, legal guys.
And what's the pain they're having that they would know? Like, what's their an obvious entry point for you?
Well...
Is it like their computer crashed?
It's usually companies that's changing. They're getting smaller, they're getting bigger, or if they have a problem, you know. Mm. Unfortunately, as I said, we get to deal with people when their hair is on fire, but we'd like not to.
But mm-hmm. if they were about to implement like kind of a remote employee situation, then they could talk to you?
If you want to know more about telecommuting, or if you have remote salespeople, you want to control, see what it's about, get more profitable using your technology, give us a call.
Great.
Wonderful. Great show, Lee.
Yeah, it was real interesting.
Very interesting. And I learned a new word. Until next week, we hope y'all have a great week.
Make you say it.
Yeah,
what is it? What's the new word, Amy? What? Tilapia?
Tilapia. Yeah, it's a fish. Until next week. Hey, I won't be around next week. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
All
and
right. We'll see you then.
In December.
December.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye-bye.